Liveline on RTE Radio 1 with Kia. Discover our 2-to-1 offers at your local Kia dealer. For more, log on to kia.com.
1850 715 815.
Hello, good afternoon, and you're very welcome to Liveline. And Joe at rt.ie and 51551 is our text number. Susan O'Mahony. Susan, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Joe.
How are you today?
Distressed.
Yeah, because you're the lead story in the Evening Herald. It's a swing and a miss. It says a High Court judge has thrown out two separate €60,000 damages claims from women who hurt their ankles getting off a playground swing. The Irish Independent judge throws out two €60,000 claims by women hurt getting off a playground swing. The Star, just example, injury claim and swing and miss. Women hurt on children's play equipment loses case. The Mail, judge rejects €60,000 claims by women hurt on swing, and it's also in the Irish Times as well. And it's in every newspaper, I suspect.
Yeah,
What did you? By the way, did you know you were going to be in the papers today? When were you told?
No, the court case was actually last June.
Okay.
But the judgment was given this week, the written judgment. Yeah. We already knew the judgment on it now, with a number of months. But the written judgment was given this week, so I guess that's why the papers picked up on it.
And every paper's picked up on it, because the whole,
right.
I don't know,
that's
what
right.
Is it, the swing gate, all the whole, and can I quote a couple of things that the judge says? By the way, when you say you're not great today, are you being ridiculed? What's happened?
Well, I try not to go on social media, but I'm getting sent things that are being said. Yeah. And yeah, I'm distressed and I'm terrified because our name and address is
in every single report. Your full name and address, and also of the other claimant, Sarah.
Right.
Your full name and address is in both in every single report. Did you know your full name and address was going to be in every single report?
No, I didn't.
If I sent a letter to that address that's in every report, it would get you, wouldn't it? Such a specific address. Okay.
Yes.
And now, how is Sarah? Do you know?
Very distressed as well. Sarah is a young girl.
Yeah.
And of course, she's very stressed. She hasn't left her house since. I haven't either, to be honest with you.
Why not?
I suppose they're terrified of the backlash now. You know. We didn't set out for any of this. We thought we only set out to prevent further injury.
To get the it's a bird's nest swing, a basket swing.
That's right.
To try and you believe it should have been higher.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
Why were you on the swing?
I just went into the playground with a child that I was minding at the time.
Okay.
I brought him in to have a good time, like you do with a child. And I went from one piece of equipment to another with him because he was under three. So you don't let a child off that age, you know, himself, because he would get injured. So I went along on each various piece of equipment, up and down sides, mm-hmm. holding him and taking him down the other side. And then we went to the bird's nest swing.
Yeah.
And it's a very big swing and, you know, with a large rim around it.
Yeah, it's like it's like a small trampoline bed, but it's a swing.
Yes. That's right.
Okay.
And I put him up in it, and because, you know, he was so young, like he could make a sudden movement. And
yeah,
because
of course,
the swing is so wide, you could do yourself a back injury reaching over to get him in time.
Okay.
So the easiest thing, and I've seen it done and I still see it done, with parents sit on the swing beside the child. It happens in every
and
playground.
Hold
and
the child.
Still happening. And hold the child.
Yeah,
you know,
you're with a three-year-old.
Yes, I did it solely to mind the child.
Yeah.
And to hold on to him while he was on the swing, you know.
So the accident, tell us what happened.
I went to get off then. The swing was still swinging. And I went, I just put down my leg to get off, and the rim of the swing is quite heavy, jammed behind my knee.
Okay.
And dragged my leg under the swing, and that's where I broke my ankle. And I was in excruciating pain.
Okay. And you did break your ankle. All the headlines said you were hurt, but you did break.
I broke my ankle, yes.
And you've medical.
Yes, and when I got off the swing, you know, I was in terrible pain. I was seeing spots in front of my eyes, I suppose, shock. And this woman came over to me and she said, "I've seen what happened to you. I think you've broken your ankle because the same thing happened to me on that swing 2 years ago." So I didn't take much notice of that. I was in too much pain to talk to her. So I had no phone with me, and I had that little boy with me. So I had to get into my car. My leg was starting to swell up, and make my way home. So I did come home, and of course I was minding children. And when I had to tell those parents that, you know, I couldn't mind their child the next day, they said to me, "I know exactly what you're talking about. It has happened to me. And it has happened to, they know of a child it has happened to." And various people have said since that the same thing, all in the same way, getting off the swing, their leg got jammed underneath it.
Off the bird's nest swing, as
yeah,
it's
off
called.
Off the bird's nest swing, yeah. So I became concerned then. Actually, I went to hospital later. My leg was broken. I was in a cast for 6 weeks and a boot for a further 4 weeks because there was a slight displacement there. And I was out of work for those 2.5 months, and it impacted me. We can talk about that later in other areas of my life as well. So I became concerned because people were saying to me, "That happened to me," or "Everyone knows someone who hurt themselves of that swing." So I thought, we have to do something about this. So I did try other avenues first. I contacted a counsellor about it, and I got no reply.
Okay.
And I suppose I'm a person, I can't let a thing go. And so I spoke to a solicitor that I know, and he said, "Look, we'll get an engineer to have a look at it."
Okay.
And I really wanted to know, was there something wrong with this swing? Why was everyone getting injured on it?
Okay.
So an engineer went out to have a look at it, and I went out with him. And when he measured it, he said, "Basically, this is serious. The bird's nest swing is hanging 1 foot lower than it should be."
Okay.
Going by standards.
Right.
So he said, "This swing is an accident waiting to happen." So, of course, I got really concerned then, and I was saying, "Oh, someone else is going to get hurt here. What do we do?" So we took an action against the council, and at all times I was willing to engage with them, and I did.
Okay.
And after that, then I learned of another girl that broke her leg. Honest, you know, and I felt guilty myself. Then I said, "You know, I should have done something sooner. What more could I do? I could have prevented that." And so, like, it's only a matter of time before some older woman, you know, might sit on that swing again with a child, just minding the child as people do. And maybe she might have underlying illnesses, and, you know, an operation could be very hard on that woman, and things can go wrong.
Well, it's important if something is. And we'll come on to another report we've come across that that supports your position in a second. But did you go to the Person Injuries Assessment Board?
Yes, we did.
And what did they decide?
They decided that I should be awarded the sum of $22,000 and pay my fees out of that myself.
Pay your own legal fees, okay.
Yes.
And did you were you willing to accept that?
Of course I was, and I did accept it.
And what happened?
The other side refused, and they said there was, in their view, there's nothing wrong with the swing.
The council decided wouldn't.
Yes.
But PIAB is a state body.
Yes.
Set up to mediate, adjudicate.
Yes.
To avoid legal as much legal fees as possible, and you're saying PIAB awarded you $22,000 after looking at the evidence.
That's right.
And the council, you said, "Yes, I will accept that and pay my own legal fees out of it."
Yes.
And the council said no.
That's right. Yeah.
But did that emerge in court?
No, not that I know of. I didn't hear it being said in court.
Okay, now, this is what was said in court by the judge, Judge Michael Toomey of the High Court. He found there was no negligence or breach of duty by Tipperary County Council. The accidents were caused by adults using equipment not designed for adult use, he said, and common sense would tell any adult they should not use a swing designed for use by children. Do you want to answer that point?
Sorry?
Do you want to address that point?
Yes, I do.
Common sense.
In certain parts, of course, he is right. And in certain parts, I would agree. I would not go into the playground for my own enjoyment and go on the swing. Or abuse it in any way. But sometimes, as I said, you know, to mind a child and to prevent a child getting injured, Even without thinking, like, you just go along and you sit beside him, you know, you might. And unfortunately, you don't expect to get your leg broken either, getting up at it, you know.
Okay, the next thing, Justice Michael Toomey of the High Court says, such cases as yours, Susan and Sarah, are more appropriately brought in the district court where legal costs are much lower than the High Court, he said. Do you want to address that point? Why did you go to the High Court rather than the district court?
Yes, well, it certainly wasn't about money with me, because I did agree before that to accept a low offer. And at all times, I was willing to engage with the council on this and draw a line under it. And just my goal here was to get the swing sorted so no one else would get injured. It was the barrister's decision to go to the High Court.
Okay. Yeah. And the judge then added, there are economic reasons why an impecunious plaintiff with an unmeritorious claim for a minor injury who was hoping for a settlement would choose to institute proceedings in the court where legal fees are the highest, since there will be greater incentive for a defendant to settle the claim, he said. He then added, he then stressed he was not suggesting this had happened in this case. Then why did he say what he said? There are economic reasons why an impecunious plaintiff, I don't know, are you impecunious, Susan?
Certainly not.
Okay. No, no, impecunious means, are you poverty stricken?
No. Oh, my goodness, I didn't realise it meant
no,
that.
No, sorry. Yeah.
Well, I certainly wouldn't be wealthy, no, but I wouldn't be poverty stricken either.
Well, there are economic reasons why an impecunious plaintiff with an unmeritorious claim, you believe there was merit to your claim. He's saying,
of course there was,
For a minor injury, do you think it was a minor injury?
No, it wasn't a minor injury,
Well, anyone who has a broken leg knows how, or a broken ankle knows how painful it'd be, who was hoping for a settlement would choose to institute proceedings in the court where legal fees are the highest, since there would be a greater incentive for a defendant to settle the claim, he said. And then he stressed, I'm not suggesting that this happened in this case. Then why did he say it? What way did you read that?
I really don't know. I only received a written judgment this week. I was having difficulty opening it on my files, to be honest with you, on the phone. So I've only actually read it once. It's hard to take it all, digest it all. I did see that. I don't know why he said that, really and truly.
And he said that you were seeking compensation at the High Court level, which is more than €60,000 from the council, on grounds it had negligently set the swing height too low. The judge accepted engineering evidence for the council that the swing was set at the right height. That was the end of the personal injuries claim, as there was no breach, said the judge, as there was no breach of duty or negligence by the council. Even if wrong in that finding, he held the council had not breached any duty of to the plaintiffs. He suggests common sense suggests an adult should not use a child's swing, and there was no evidence of the swing being an injury risk to children who use the swing. He also, he raised the issue of the common sense again as well. Now, you have sent us a document, which is from Play Services Ireland, and it's the annual playground inspection report for the Newcastle, Porus, Susarta, Clonmel. This is the playground we're talking about, isn't it?
That's right, yes.
And this was supplied to Tipperary County Council on June of last year. Isn't that correct?
That's right, yes.
Okay. And we go through there are basically five levels of when they go through each piece of equipment, and it's about priority. Level one is action immediately. Level two is action within 1 month. Level three is 3 months. Level four is 9 months. And level five is just monitor the. And some of it has got to do with painting. Every item of equipment in the graveyard, in the playground, every item of equipment in the playground gets a level three or a level five. In other words, level five means no action needed. Level three means action, or level four, action within 9 months. Level three, within 3 months. Only one item gets a level two, which is action within 1 month. And that is the basket you are talking about.
Yes.
Isn't that correct?
That's right, yes.
Okay. And this organisation, Play Services Ireland, that's what they do. They assess playgrounds for safety. They say raise the basket by 300 millimetres, which is about 1 foot.
Yes,
replace worn shackles, replace nut and chain connection, untwist chairs. But it clearly says raise basket by 300 metres and the item priority they give it is 2, which is a second. 1 is action immediately, 2 is action, do it within a month.
Yes.
Now, have the council done it?
No.
Was the judge aware of this report?
No, you see, when we took our case, it is alleged that the playground was closed due to our cases. But they weren't, because we hurt our legs in 2016 and the playground didn't close down until 2020. And it closed down because an inspection was only carried out for the first time in 2020. And there it was noted that repairs needed to be done.
Okay, the other thing the judge said, which I, and he's entitled to say what he said, he has all the information there in front of him, we're told. In dismissing both cases, the judge voiced concern about the chilling effect of such litigation, even when unsuccessful, for the provision of play facilities for children and the freedoms of all citizens. In other words, what do you understand by what the judge was saying there?
Yeah, there's people taking claims will affect, the playgrounds. You know, they might find it difficult to get insurance. And of course I hear that. I've never taken a claim in my life. This is my first time experience going to court. Now, and I'm
64 years of age. Okay, 64. Just to be clear, Susan, the judge was never given this report.
No,
in fairness to him.
We tried to obtain it before we were only made aware of it shortly before the court case. And we did try to obtain the report before court, but we didn't in time.
So who would have seen this report?
We did make the judge aware that the report was there towards the end of the court, of the hearing, but he didn't ask to see it.
Because in fairness, he had another engineer's report, hadn't
that's
he?
That's right.
Saying
that's
there was
right.
no problem.
Yeah, the council brought up their own engineer.
And when was the playground closed?
In 2020.
Okay.
But the inspection was carried out in 2020. So they would have had that report, the council, in 2020 before court. Now, maybe they weren't aware of it. Maybe it was sitting on the shelf somewhere. I don't know, but the council didn't bring that report with them to court. And we couldn't obtain it in time.
Okay, so the judge never saw the report. In fairness, never saw the report. Now, are you going to appeal?
I am going to appeal.
Why?
Because they are still maintaining there is nothing wrong to swing, and if they open the playground, I want to see the playground opened. I mind children. I'm a caring person by nature and by profession. I've always cared for people. I'm a people person, and I take my stand that I don't want to see anyone getting hurt, be it a child, and it has the potential to hurt a child. Our engineer has said it because it is hanging so low, and we cannot have that either.
Okay, here's the Tipperary County Council statement. The playground was developed by a local community group in Newcastle County, Tipperary. The site of the playground is adjacent to a private housing estate and sited on privately owned land. The playground is not owned, operated or managed by the County Council. Following reports that there were insurance claims against the playground, a decision was taken to close the playground in Newcastle. At that time, the equipment was considered to be in good condition and the playground needed some small repair work such as boundary repairs. The playground remained closed largely because insurance claims discouraged new volunteers from the community to participate on the playground committee. Recently, a reformed community ground has worked closely with the County Council and has secured funding of €2,533 from the department under the Capital Play and Recreation Grant Scheme. The County Council has agreed to assist the community in reopening playground. Now, I've just been handed another statement from the County Council. The playground has also, I'm trying to read this as I get it, the playground committee is also engaged with the local national school, which is near the playground, and with the cooperation, carried out an exercise with school children about reopening of the playground and used the opportunity to ask and talk to students about what changes they needed to what changes they wished to see to make to the amenity to make it more inclusive for all students in the community. As a result of this engagement with local children and communication from school management, the committee have opted to install a buggy swing for wheelchair and special need users. So they're putting in a buggy swing. They don't say anything about the Bird's Nest swing.
Okay.
Though they have that report saying there, which was given to them, saying the Bird's Nest swing is too low. The County Council has also agreed to assist the community in reopening of Newcastle Playground as part of the Tipperary Playground policy. Are you being blamed on shutting the playground?
Well, we are. We are being blamed. But as I said, our accident happened in 2016. It wasn't closed down until the inspection was carried out in 2020. So I feel we have done some good. We have forced an inspection to the playground.
And an assessment of it.
And we're going to continue and make sure that that swing is made safe. It needs to be lifted 1 foot off the ground or removed. We want children to be happy and we want them to be safe. And I don't want to see anyone, child or care or parents, getting hurt again.
And have you asked your solicitor or legal team, who do you appeal to, and have you grounds for an appeal?
We have grounds for an appeal, yes.
And what is that?
Well, obviously, I'll have to go through it and wish them, but I have been told we have grounds. And we're actually going forward with that before the end of this month. It's in motion, yes.
Okay, but you're definitely going to be...
We're at all times willing to engage with the council. All we really want is for them to agree to lift the swing 1 foot off the ground. That's all it'll take. And everyone
But the story for anyone who reads the headline today in every single newspaper is that two adult women were on a swing and a child swing and hurt themselves. In your case, it was a broken ankle. What was Sarah's injury?
I know it was a broken ankle as well.
But totally separate, not on the same occasion or anything.
Yes.
And by the way, what time of day were you in the playground?
I can't remember exactly now, but it would be the middle of the day anyway.
Middle of the day, okay. Yeah. Okay.
And you know, like, I had other things going on in my own life at the time, and for me it was, I was enjoying the break in the playground as well with the child, you know what I mean? Just we were out in the fresh air and I was away from other things that were going on.
And you're saying the reason why you took the case was to try and get the council primarily to address the problem that your engineer had identified.
Yes.
And this PSI Ireland, Play Saves is Ireland, subsequently, and it's signed by, it gives the name of the inspector.
Yes.
Underneath it all. Okay.
I mean, it's fairly clear on the report that the swing, and that's an inspection the council had have carried out themselves, and they were told there as well, that was our argument, that it needs to be lifted. That's all we've asked for in court, that the swing be lifted 1 foot off the ground. The council argued, despite this report, that there's nothing wrong with the swing, and still to this day refuse to lift it. Now, we know the report states clearly that it does need to be lifted 1 foot off the ground to prevent injury. As our engineer said, it's an accident waiting to happen.
And was your engineer heard in court?
He was.
Okay, well then, in fairness, the judge heard that as well.
He heard both sides.
Okay, and when you say Sarah,
is
I know you're distressed over the publicity and the way it's been reported that these are two adults acting the aegis on a children's swing and then trying to get money for it.
Yeah.
And you say Sarah won't leave the house.
That's right. Yeah. I can't speak I would know Sarah from the village, but until the day in court, I had never spoken to her before.
Okay.
But I know from her mother now, you know, obviously, that she is extremely, extremely distressed.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
And that's mainly because of, well, the media have put it.
And that's why I choose to talk to you today, to try and explain our side.
Well, you're very brave, I think, Susan, because you know, it goes back to, you know, bogus compensation claims.
I know this, yeah.
PIAB being set up, but none of the papers report that PIAB decided you should get €22,000 after mediating, but that the council refused.
Yeah.
That's not reported anywhere. So it's useful to make that public, even for your own. And then there's the whole Maria Bailey feels she was badly ridiculed as well.
Yeah.
But in your case, this is a judgment, a written judgment by a High Court judge, who raises the issue of impecunious plaintiffs with an unmeritorious claim for a minor injury, hoping for a settlement, will choose to institute proceedings in the court where legal fees are the highest, since there will be greater incentive for a defendant to settle the claim, he said. He stressed he was not suggesting that this had happened in this case, and also that these cases, whether successful or not, would have a chilling effect on basically opening new playgrounds. That's what he was saying. Susan, stay there for a sec. Joe at RT.ie. Joan O'Sullivan, you know the swings we're talking about, the Bird's Nest swing.
No, sorry, Joe. No, I don't know those swings. I rang in because I'm a grandmother who uses a similar one of those Bird's Nest swings. I use one with my grandchildren. They're aged 2 and 3. And I just rang in because I would really like to appeal to people, adults, not to use children's play equipment. With my own grandchildren, I monitor them, and I'm actually really glad that they're low off the ground, because if they were to fall out, they wouldn't fall very far. But of course, I monitor them quite closely, and it's not like you swing them high or anything. You only do what is safe to do with them. But I think that these playgrounds and this equipment, look, all playground equipment brings an element of risk. That's why children enjoy it, and that's what we're supposed to do with children, allow children explore their boundaries. But they're not designed for adults, Joe, and I don't go into it. And, you know, everybody loves a swing. Everybody does. I love a swing. But if I go into a children's playground and I go on the swing, look, I'll probably break it. Whatever about injuring myself, I'll probably break it. And what does that do to the community who paid for it and to the children who want to use it? So, my point is, I would appeal to adults, please, just if before children, let children use them.
Susan, do you want to reply as to why you used it, why you sat on the swing with the child?
It just happens without thinking, Joe, I suppose, you know.
Did you think you'd break it?
No, because it's a large swing and, you know, it can hold more than one person on it.
Okay.
And certainly if I did break it, I would be the first person to replace it.
And when you say, Joan, you use one of those swings for your... Is this in a public playground or in your own garden or...?
Oh, gosh, they're big swings. So it's in a number of public playgrounds have them.
So,
I use them in playgrounds, but as I say... They're big, but I don't know. There's no weight restriction on them, I think, but I don't think that they are built for adults. And I just, you know, you see adults in playgrounds.
But the issue here, the engineer's report. One engineer saying that the swing was at the right height, and another engineer, two engineering reports now. One from PSI Ireland, and one that the legal team for Susan and Sarah commissioned. They say it was too low, and the other engineer says, no, it was fine. Okay. Joan O'Sullivan, thanks indeed. Joan is in Swords. Sarah, your quick point, please.
Joe, thanks for taking my call. Can I just tell you that we have a special needs child here, and those swings are so fantastic, but we are mired with adults using them. And we go down to the playground, and he loves it. And we actually loved it so much, we actually thought about getting one here, but they're so expensive.
Okay.
So my worry now is...
And when you say, Sarah, adults using them on their own?
Yes.
Without a baby or a child?
Yes, teenagers, I should say.
But Susan had a three-year-old in her arms on the swing.
Yes, you do. Well, you do see parents, maybe a mother or somebody in with a child as well. And our worry is the council will remove these swings now, and they are the only piece of equipment a lot of the special needs kids can use
in these
playgrounds. And
well, in fairness to Tipperary County Council, they say they've now, following consultation with local children, they've opted, or the committee have opted, does that mean the Bird's Nest one's gone, have opted to install a buggy swing for wheelchair and special need users. I'm not familiar with the buggy swing, but anyway.
Yeah.
Okay. But you, what you're talking about is teenagers abusing them.
Yes, you have. You must remember, it's suitable for special needs kids to have them low as well.
Yeah.
Lifting the child in. But, they're meant for kids. Sorry.
Okay, point made.
Thank you so much.
Thanks, Sarah. Cormac Rogers is in Dublin, 51551 joe@rt.ie. Cormac, your point, please.
Hello, Joe. How are you doing? How's things?
All good. Yeah, go ahead, Cormac.
Yeah, Joe, I was just listening to that and I was following the case and all, and I was just saying to myself, I go to two playgrounds, my little fella there, two local playgrounds, and only a couple of weeks ago, it was a slide, a very high slide. You had to go up onto timbers and across onto it and all. And I was up with him. The place was busy enough, mostly children there. And I was getting ready to go down in front of him. And this little 7-year-old girl came up to me. And she pulled me jumper and she said, "Excuse me." And I said, "Yeah." And she said, "You shouldn't be up here. You're too old." And I said, I looked at her and I looked around. And I said, but, and she says, "No." She says, "You could fall and hurt yourself." And I realised, wait, no, she's actually right.
Okay.
A seven-year-old is telling me.
So why were you? Why did you get up there? So.
Oh, so just listen. I don't know, but some fellas on listen to this.
Were you worried that your own child might fall off? That's what I mean.
Well, he was apprehensive about getting up and going down. Well, he was just initial.
Yeah.
It made me say to myself, "Wait, now, hang on a second." And Joe, just while I'm on. As human beings, we learn by mistakes and all. And listen to that lady. Listen, I know what a broken leg is sore, and it will be sore for years to come. It'll be winters, cold winters nights, and your foot could be sore, and people don't realise that.
It is awful.
Yeah, but everyone listen to this now. We learn by our mistakes, and now from now on, the listeners to this now will say, "I'm not going to get up on these swings."
Yeah, but in fairness, Susan is saying that the swing is a mistake. The height of the swing off the ground was a mistake, as mentioned by two engineering groups.
Yes, the engineering groups are engineering groups, but like children, you know what I mean? They can put them engineering groups wrong and say, "Wait, now, hang on a second." Like that lady on there saying about her special needs child, the lower them swings, the better that they can fall into and fall out again instead of being up high and all. And that's the long and the short of it. I'm just thinking, God, what swings did you have years ago in Ballyer? Swings were maybe some swings were 4 foot off the ground, weren't they? Car tires.
Yeah, but the swing we had was off a lamppost. anyway, okay,
Thanks, Joe.
Okay, Cormac, thanks indeed.
Good man.
Susan, what's ahead of you now? Because do you fear, not fear, but are you embarrassed going out?
Yeah, I am. I feel like we've been painted for something we're not, you know. We're genuine cases. As I said, we weren't on the things for our own amusement. I don't think when you go in as part of minding a child and enjoying any playground that you should get your foot broke. And if it only happened to me, I wouldn't have taken a case. I took this case because of the amount of people, and that's important, Joe, that have hurt their leg on this swing. And that means very, very likely other people are going to get hurt in the future. And that's the issue here, really. You know, as I said, I'm a people person. I want to prevent injuries to anyone else, and that's the sole reason I've taken this course. I did try other avenues. But what I find with counsellors is, I suppose they're looking for votes, but as I said, I'm trying to prevent injuries. So you go to a counsellor and you know that
and
they're voting.
Do you plan to go out at the weekend? Are you Catholic or do you go to church services or?
Yeah, no, I would be a person that would go out. I don't, as I said to George, I haven't exaggerated my injuries. I've told him, for example, like my foot was swollen for months after, even when, like, you're in terrible pain the first week, you can't stand up. Anyone that broke their leg will tell you the same thing, obviously.
Now, the other interesting thing, like, the statement from the county council, they give us a detailed statement. But they begin by saying the playground's nothing to do with us. The playground's not owned, operated and managed or managed by Tipperary County Council.
And yet they were there at court answering to it, so I don't know.
But then they say at the end, there's been engagement with the local community and they've secured 2,500 from the Department of Children.
Yeah, I think to George, if I remember.
Well, did the council at any stage say, this has nothing to do with us?
No, they didn't.
We don't own, operate or manage.
No, they didn't.
When the PIAB judgment, the Personal Injuries Assessment Board, which everyone thinks is a great thing, and it's usually the plaintiff, the complainant, in this case, you say the council, the PIAB offered you, said you should get 22,000 and pay your own legal fees, and Tipperary County Council said no. But did Tipperary County Council say, well, it's nothing to do with us, it's not owned, operated or managed by us?
No, that was never said. The judge seemed to be a little bit muddled by that towards the end. There was some comment on it.
Okay, well, I wasn't.
But there, I don't know.
But they never claimed it.
No.
They never said, why are we here?
No, they didn't, no.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, Susan, and my point is, will you go out this weekend?
I tell you, my daughter has recently got engaged and she has a party on tomorrow night and I'm here now saying, no, I can't face the public, which is hard on her now.
Why? Why can't you face the public?
I just can't, Joe. As I said, I did this to prevent injuries to people in the community, because I had such a horrific injury myself.
Do you think people might say something to you?
Well, I've read the comments, you know. I didn't read them myself, they were sent to me, which is, you know, I prefer people didn't send it to me.
I don't want to know who sent it to you, but what do you mean they sent it to you?
Well, they sent it saying, have you seen this and have you seen that, you know? I'm not going to read anymore. I'm just not going to. But the other side of this, Joe, that I didn't mention is sometimes these injuries can have ripple effects on other family members. And when this happened to me, we were looking after my mother at home for a period of 9 years. She had a very, very serious and very unwed. And just before my accident, we were told I was her carer. And I was her full-time carer because she needed help with feeding and everything. And just before that accident, I was told my mother had advanced cervical cancer.
Okay.
And she was only given a few months to live. So we were on her last few months of life and we wanted to continue what we had been doing those 9 years with her. But because I broke my leg, and it's easy, these are just words to everyone else. And I know no one really cares. But for me, I had to go in and tell my mother, ma'am, you have to go into care for a couple of months. And we all knew the situation, you know, and we didn't know how much time we'd left with her.
Yeah.
So she had to go to hospital. Now, Joe, at this stage, my mother was just over 6 stone weight. And even the journey to the hospital alone was hard.
Okay.
And when my leg got better, 2 months later, we brought her back straight away again.
Yeah.
And the journey took its toll again and her condition deteriorated and she ended up in hospital and she wasn't back home anymore. And she died the following October. The following October, my leg was still swollen. I couldn't even buy a shoe for a year and a half because one leg was swollen more than the other.
Mm-hmm.
But the following October, at her funeral, I wore a bit of a heel. I don't normally wear heels because I don't even go out, to be honest with you. But I did, and I told that to the judge, I haven't exaggerated my injuries. I said it doesn't matter about heels to me because I don't go out anyway. And I made a full recovery afterwards. At her funeral, when everyone left the grave, my leg was in such agony because I was now in a small heel shoe and was swelling as the hours were going on. Yeah. I'd take my shoes off, and that's a fact, Joe, and walk barefoot to the hotel.
And have you been talking to Sarah? Anyone belong to her since then?
I've been talking to her mother. Yeah, Sarah's, to be honest with you, I can't talk about someone else, but I know she's in her bedroom at home and she's highly distressed. I can't say anymore.
She won't leave her bedroom.
Yeah.
And what age, you told me you're 64, what age group would Sarah be?
I'm 54.
Oh, 54, sorry. Yeah. What age group would Sarah be? Would she be younger?
I'd say early 20s, 25, yeah. And this happened, Joe, like 5 years ago, like, so. you know. Mm. So I was very sad when it happened to me, you know, and I was sad that all this had happened with my mother as well. I was dealing with a broken leg. I was out of work. I did try other avenues. I did agree for a small settlement from PIAB. I'm not worried about the money. I'm still not worried about the money. I still am worried about the swing because they refused to fix it.
But in a perverse way, by the judgment and... For some reason, every single newspaper picked it up and ran either led with it. In the world we live in, the Herald led with it. Other papers had it very prominently, including the Irish Times. But in a perverse way, by people reading it, they say, well, I wouldn't get on one of those swings now with my baby.
Yeah, and maybe that's a good thing too, because like as I said, I've seen before my accident, after my accident, I feel like walking over to women now saying, you know, you might be better off not to sit, but you can't, obviously. I still see women sit on those swings, and I've seen comments saying we're stupid. It's not that we're stupid. We haven't done anything stupid.
But to finish it, you are appealing.
It would be just as stupid not to sit beside a child, you know.
You've made that point, but you are going to legally appeal.
Until the council say that they will... lift the swing. I mean, it's going to be lifted by one. It needs to be lifted by one.
But then you're going to have to pay your legal costs for you lost this case. Isn't that correct?
I knew that going to the High Court. I was told it that morning. If you go in,
and have you any idea how much your legal costs are going to be, barristers?
In the High Court, I was told I would have to pay 20,000 going in. I knew there was a great chance we were going to lose. I felt so strongly about it. I'm just of that mind frame, Joe. I've always been like that about everything.
So how much do you have to pay to your lawyers?
I think my one lawyer is worth 10,000. Yeah.
And the barrister, does that include the barrister?
Yes, I think we're looking at in around 20 odd thousand. We'll have to be paid there, yeah.
And have you got that money?
I'm sure I'll have to come up with it, won't I?
And is Sarah facing the same legal bill, or is that between the two of you?
I'm not too sure now. We haven't discussed it yet.
But just to be clear, you are going to appeal. You've told me that.
We are going to appeal, yeah.
Okay. Well, Susan, mind yourself. People are fair-minded, and just mind yourself.
I understand other people's opinions too, and I do understand.
But you're adamant. I did nothing wrong.
I believe I didn't. My interests were in my own interests to look after the child.
Okay. Yeah. Susan O'Mahony, thanks indeed. Now I know that the reason they give out addresses is to make sure they don't confuse it with another Sarah Kennedy or Susan O'Mahony, but it is your exact address. They don't say there's 1, 2, 3, 4 locations on the address. They could have given, anyway, that's the way it's done in court. Okay, Susan O'Mahony, thank you so much. joe@rte.ie.
Talk to Joe on 1850 715 815. Talk to Joe on 1850 715 815.
And joe@rte.ie. This is another very unusual one. Arlo O'Connor is a casting director, Irish originally, and has been on the programme before. Arlo, you've seen this tweet from Actors Equity.
Well, yes. Yeah.
And it says, Equity is aware of a film production company asking performers to submit nude audition tapes. Yeah. If you're approached by this company, then name it and ask for nude tapes. Do not engage and instead report the incident to Equity ASAP. Who would look for a nude audition tape?
I mean, I've no audition. I've no idea who would. There's nobody with any integrity that would ask someone to remove their clothes for a self-tape. But it's not the first time this has happened. I think actors have found themselves in this position before. But it's, I've no idea where this came from. I think we've got an actor coming on who was involved in this, would be able to tell you more. Because
do you think actors would... I know things are bad and actors generally don't make a lot of money generally, but it is a real company that's looking for these nude audition tapes.
Well, I don't know who the company are. I don't know if they're pretending to be a real company. I can't imagine how they are a real company, because this goes against the agreement that the company would be working, you know, with, like our PAC TV agreement and all of the agreements we have with Equity, no artist should ever be required to appear nude until after being interviewed for the part, whatever its nature. You know, it's okay. It's a very quick answer. You do not need to do this. I believe it's come from Mandy, which is a site that will put breakdowns out. And a lot of actors who maybe aren't represented by an agent will submit themselves. And I think that's where this happens.
Okay. Well, one actor who has admitted this afternoon, actually, or this morning, that he was approached and he did submit is the very well-known English actor Tom Ward Thomas. Killing Eve, Sarah, Journey's End, Summer in February. Tom Ward Thomas. Tom, good afternoon.
Hello.
How are you keeping?
Yeah, I'm all right, thank you.
Okay, tell us what happened, Tom.
When I submitted the tape, I submitted the tape but didn't take my clothes off. But they asked for me to after that. But I got approached through Mandy by this company, this woman called Catherine Broad. She basically invited me to do a self-tape, and she said, we think you'd be perfect for this character. And it's for a TV series. It's £1,500 a day, and you'd be absolutely perfect for it. So, and I thought, fantastic. And I read the sides, the scene that they sent, and I thought, well, I'm not exactly perfect for it. It was sort of like a loudmouth construction worker, kind of like who was harassing a girl on a street. And then in the scene, this girl who has magical powers manages to get these builders who are harassing her to take all their clothes off and do a dance.
Okay.
And I thought it was actually quite funny. It was quite a good script. And I did a self-tape. I got a friend of mine to help me, and I did Head and Shoulders.
Okay.
As you normally do with a self-tape. And I took off my top in the course of the self-tape.
Okay.
And then I sort of mimed like everything else. And again, it was only Head and Shoulders. And I submitted it, and she emailed me back really quickly saying, we loved it, it was great, I think we want another one where it's kind of full body shot, and we just need to do it again and really go for it in the end. And she was being very descriptive about kind of like taking each item off.
Mm-hmm.
And I just emailed her back and said, just to clarify, I'm assuming that you want me to mime removing my boxers.
Mm-hmm.
And she just said, oh, whatever you're comfortable with, but we really want you to sort of go, whatever you're comfortable with, but here's a nudity rider. And she sent me this Word document that just said, it didn't really mean anything, but it just said, your privacy is important to us, essentially. And I just had messaged her back going, if it's okay with you, I think I will keep my underwear on, thank you very much. And then I just decided not to. I've never been asked to sort of submit a second self-tape anyway, let alone one where they're quite sort of, she was very hinting towards it. She never said, we want you to be nude. She was very much hinting towards it. And then I just thought I'd clarify again, saying, would you ideally like me to remove my underwear? And she again said, whatever you're comfortable with, here's the nudity rider again. And I just then thought, nah.
It's the self-tape is the audition tape you make and send in for the part. But what's a nudity rider?
I've never heard of it before. I think in a job, if you're actually filming something or in a play, I assume that you have a deal about what the levels of nudity will involve. But I've never heard of a nudity rider, especially in an audition.
Orla, do you know what a nudity rider is?
Yeah, I mean, the nudity rider would be when you're actually shooting it. For instance, you might not agree to do the scenes as scripted and you may want to have a body double in, and that will be in your nudity rider. You know, your conditions, basically. But that would never be needed for an actual casting tape. Tom, was it a casting director that asked you?
Don't use any names now, please.
No,
I'm not going to use any names. I'm just saying, wasn't it a casting director?
It wasn't a casting director that I'd ever heard of, no.
Was she a producer then? Or what was her... Did you check out her professional credentials before you sent anything?
I think it was a Gmail address. And I didn't send... I didn't check her professional credentials before I sent the first tape. But I've been approached and I've applied for things on Mandy for sort of small independent films. Now, this was paying £1,500 a day, so it wasn't obviously small independent, and they said it was a TV series. So I didn't really think anything of it. I just submitted the tape. Okay.
Have you come through the complaint to Mandy?
No, I haven't actually.
Would you explain, just explain who or what Mandy is, Arla?
Well, Tom, you can. Mandy is it's not a platform I use. I mainly use Spotlight when I'm sending out breakdowns or liaising with agents. But Mandy is. Tom, what do you want to explain what Mandy is? Because it's not something I use.
Yeah, it's a casting website that I would describe as the level down from Spotlight, which is which most reputable casting directors use.
Okay, but
Mandy
it's a well known, respected website.
It's well known enough, Joe, that they should know not to allow this to happen.
Okay.
A complaint should go in straight away.
I know you've sent us the email, Sam, but one stage, this is from. Yeah, from the organisation. If you're comfortable going boxers down, then go for it.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
And Tom, in Killing, I know you've been in Killing Eve and you've been in a load of other productions, but have you ever done have you ever done a nudity scene before?
I haven't done a nudity scene. I've done a love scene, but I haven't been I haven't been undressed.
And was there an intimacy coordinator which are there? Did they exist?
No, there wasn't.
Okay.
But it was very well done. It was there was no feelings of being uncomfortable in that instant, no.
Okay. Okay, well, just a warning. I don't know if any Irish actors have got it. Would Irish actors use Mandy or Spotlight? I presume they would just cast it. Yeah,
there's a lot of Irish actors who are not on Spotlight. So I think they would use things like that.
I presume you have to pay to go on Spotlight, do you?
You do,
yeah.
I'm sure you have to. I don't know if you have to pay for Mandy, but I'm sure there's some subscription fee.
Okay.
Yeah,
Arla, thanks. So how are you keeping, Arla, generally? How are things in the business?
I'm very good, Joe. Yes, you've actually inspired us since we last spoke. We've now written the film for Nelson's Head. So that was further to you bringing it up again.
You were on about... That's what you were on. It was Nelson's Head. We were looking. You have the. What do you have? His lip or his ear?
I have a piece of the ear, but we were talking about the story about them shooting in the head. So that's now been written. So hopefully we'll see it in a cinema in the future. Yeah.
And can I play myself? Now, there will be a nudity rider. But can I play myself?
We've written a role for you, Joe, actually. Yeah,
okay.
We've written a role for you. You're definitely in it.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Tom, what are you? Have you work at the minute, Tom?
It's quiet at the moment, but I've just made a short film that I wrote myself that is in the editing process at the moment.
Oh, well done.
And been cracking on with all sorts of things. I should also just mention that, Mandy, there was no breakdown.
What does breakdown mean? Tom.
So it like a job break, like a job breakdown. So there was no thing that went out that said, we are looking for actors to fill this role. They just contacted me directly.
Interestingly, they
then immediately asked for my email address, and then everything else was on email. And I did go back to check the original Mandy message, and it was gone.
Okay.
So they deleted their message.
Okay, well, it's a fascinating story, and it's also reminding people, will you support? Please, it's not for, I'm just asking people, I can't preach. Please support your local actors and local drama that's getting back up on its feet. I know the Bachelor's Walk lads are doing a piece at the minute, and it's being streamed every night on various websites. I know Rex Ryan is doing a play in Dawson Street. I know the Viking, Seamus O'Rourke, is in Philadelphia, Here I Come in Cork. Please support them, especially at this time. Okay, Tom Warr Thomas and Arlo O'Connor, thank you both.
Talk to Joe on 1850 715 815. Talk to Joe on 1850 715 815.
And Joe at RT.ie. It's I think it's 10 weeks to Christmas Eve. And we are doing a Christmas Eve show this year at 10 o'clock, at 9 o'clock in the morning. But anyway, and it's Friday. But Billy Doran is contacting. Are you there, Billy?
I am indeed, yeah.
How are you keeping?
I'm keeping very well now.
When did you make the Christmas pudding?
I meant about 6 weeks ago.
Oh, and do you normally make them so early?
Ah, well, I do, because you mature a bit better before Christmas.
Bit like yourself, Billy. And how many of them did you bake?
Well, I do make one for my cousin in Glasgow, and I make another one for a neighbour and so forth on. But I taught myself. I'd send one down to Rosaline as well. Rosie, you know yourself. Okay. She's living down in Ballyjames.
Okay, we'll get to Rosie in a minute. The pudding won't get to her. We'll get to her.
Oh, the pudding is well gone.
And Billy, is your pudding has it a good reputation, your Christmas pudding?
Oh, absolutely.
Wow. And what's
number
your
one?
And you put the cinnamon, the nutmeg, the mixed spice, the raisins, sultanas, mixed bean, cherry,
almonds,
bread. Oh, you have rum in it.
And Guinness is in it, the whole shebang. We do it a lot.
Oh,
it's my mother's
gorgeous
recipe, actually. She gave me when she's dead and gone now, you know.
And that was handed down.
It was indeed. Yeah.
Okay. Now, so what's the story? You made your Christmas pudding for Rosaline and Ballyjames Duff, and what
That's
happened?
That's correct.
What happened?
Well, I'll tell you what happened. I went up to the post office there in Ringsend, and the woman gave me a standard box, you know, a road travel for the 26 counties. It cost me €9. And I put the pudding in it and a little note that said, they're telling her to use it now, and I send her another one at Christmas.
Anyway,
I says to her, I rang Rose and said, the girl told me it'd be down there Friday. That now I put that in on the 29th of September.
Okay.
But today, she was at the buying custard and that. She was going to pour it on the pudding or whatever. So what happened then was, nothing happened. And she rang me back. She says, the postman hadn't arrived, you know.
So I says,
we'll leave it on Monday and see what happens. So we never arrived on the Monday or the Tuesday. And I got my daughter to track it. You know, you have to have a tracking thing from the PO. And when she tracked it, I nearly fell out of my standings. It went down to the sorting office. I think it's in Port Leash.
It was sent
from there to Dublin Airport. From Dublin Airport, it was flown to Heathrow Airport. And from Heathrow Airport, it was flown to Canada. And some fella in Ontario got it. He was on the Facebook and he was letting me daughter know. He was trying to find out about the pudding. So we got through to him eventually, and we were trying to explain to him. He says that his a relative of some sort had sent him a letter or a Christmas card, and it stuck onto my parcel, you see.
Yeah.
It stuck onto the parcel with the pudding in it. And whatever happened, it was delivered to his door in Ontario and Canada.
But Billy's pudding from Ringsend that was supposed to be going to Ballyjames Duff.
Cavan, not Canada.
No, I can't. In Cavan, not Canada. It didn't just end up in Canada in a field. It ended up at a specific address in Canada.
Oh, it did. Yeah, your man got in touch with us. He says he's relatives down here in Ringsend called Dunphy. He says that they're going back. There's relatives of his, this Canadian guy. A very nice person.
And what did you say to him?
Well, I told him he was wondering what he'd do with the pudding. See, a man delivered it to his door, and the card was stuck over Rosie's address in Cavan. And he thought it was for him. And he took the box in, and when he realised it wasn't for him, he rang the post office in Canada, whoever they are. And they says, well, we can't take it back because you signed for it. So he asked me, what would he do with his pudding? And I says, well, you may as well eat it. It's not coming back through Heathrow and Dublin Airport. And, you know, the whole trip back again.
I don't know
how it got there with €9 only on the box, if you ask me, Anton. You know what I mean?
And how long do you steam puddings, don't you? How long do you steam your pudding for?
Well, I boiled that in the pot. I got up at midnight and I spent 8 hours with it. And then I had to make it prior to that. And I spent 8 hours up all night, topping it up with boiling water. You know the way you have to do it. It takes 8 hours for it.
You stayed up for 8 hours?
I did indeed, yeah. I stayed up all night and I had it done and everything was grand. And that's what happened to the pudding that was sent off out there to I don't believe the trip. You're even as your woman in the post office going back to her. And she said, have a look at that in your tracking thing. And she couldn't believe, she nearly fell over standing when she see him where it went. You know what I mean?
Yeah. So you said to and do they eat Christmas pudding in Canada? They do now, did you?
Oh, well, he says that he remembered making it in a pillowcase, his mother or grandmother.
I remember that.
I remember my own mother, God love.
In the muslin.
Muslin cloth, and he says he used to make it in a pillowcase, but I think my mother used the muslin cloth, as you're saying.
And was he from Ireland?
I think his name was Owen McCabe, if I'm not mistaken.
But this is a total randomer.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I don't know the name of God. But I told her to eat the pudding anyway, so there's no point in sending her back. Rosie is have to just wait for another pudding. She's still at the gate waiting for her pudding. She could have went to North Korea or anything. You wouldn't know where it went.
Come here, will you send them some boards custards?
Well, she said she had a course of roses. Oh, you better buy something else to put over it.
But I said, send them on McCabe a packet of boards.
Well, no, but I mean, he was very nice about it, and he's a very nice person, quite honest.
And did he, I'm not saying he should or he would, but did he offer you a few bob for the pudding? Puddings are expensive.
Well,
you wouldn't have taken
the man to do not at all. I told him to enjoy it and to have it with his missus, you know. I was telling him here, I'm in here in the Irish townhouse, and I was telling the boss, Shane, he's a great character, and Neil, the manager, and I was telling him to
start. Is that Shane I see there behind the bar after dropping the glass?
Well, I'm in the lounge now.
Oh, you're in the lounge, okay.
Oh, do you have me in the camera there?
Yeah, no.
Well, I'm in the lounge. I'm just sitting here in my own because you have the horse raced on.
And you like your pint?
Well, I've been drinking. I'll tell you the truth. All I've been drinking is soda water and like lemon. Because I wanted to talk to you about it. But it's a great boozer here.
It's the Irish House. And come here, the bookies is next door, isn't
it? That's only across the road there,
And what racing is on today?
Well, there's Haydock is on, and I think it's Newcastle and some other one.
And
I'd written a few horses out, but I was waiting for you to ring, you know, so I didn't want to.
So if we get requests for your Christmas for Billy Doran's of Ringsend, Raytown, Billy Doran's special Irish stroke Canadian Christmas pudding recipe, would you be willing to pass it on, or is it going to stay secret?
I certainly would. I don't give it to many people it's a secret, you know what I'm saying? Can I just say hello to everyone down in the cabin there, my sister, if she's on there. I'm sure they're all listening in. And all my family and Paul and Bernard. Listen, thanks very much. But I'll tell you one thing. Tell Joe that I'll send him out a wee pudding for the
thanks.
Christmas.
I'm looking forward.
I'll make
to
another couple
good lass.
And I'll send them out to you.
Thanks,
right?
Billy. Yeah. Okay, Billy. Yeah. Bye, yourself.
Thanks very much indeed.
Best of luck. Thanks for
contacting. Yeah.
Best of luck and best luck at the races this afternoon.
Talk to Joe on 1850 715 815. Talk to Joe on 1850 715 815.
We'll finish on one of the things that was unexpected during the week, and that was when the free contraceptives were announced for women aged between 18 and 25. The overall reaction on Liveline was, well done, about time, and do people remember the years ago, not that far long ago, and were we right in the head, all the things that we put up with Archbishop's deciding whether you could get the pill. And I know Clara Cullen has written a book called His Grace, along with Margaret O'Hurgard, the late Margaret, about Archbishop John Charles McQuaid's letters. He was mentioned here the other day. Clara, good afternoon.
Good afternoon. How are you?
And where are Archbishop John McQuaid's letters?
All of John Charles McQuaid's letters are in the Diocesan Archives now in Drumcondra.
And anyone can go in, can they?
Yeah, they've got a wonderful archivist and some wonderful assistants there, and they're so helpful. But there's miles of them. I think he kept every piece of correspondence.
Wow.
He annotated everything. He was meticulous.
And he was a good writer.
He was. Well, he was also a clear writer, which is very good, which is great when you're actually reading it, reading his stuff.
Okay, and what? Give me examples of how he believed he was entitled to not just have a view on everything, but to actually communicate that view.
I kind of changed my mind about him because I grew up in John McQuaid's Ireland.
Mm-hmm.
So, but he was incredibly organised. He was a wonderful administrator,
mm-hmm.
meticulous in everything he did, but he had very clear and defined views of what Ireland should be. And by Ireland, he meant a Catholic Ireland.
A very Catholic Ireland.
Well, yes.
And his position regarding women and women's rights?
We were talking about this, but I actually think that he wasn't anti-woman. He just thought women were part of the fabric of society and should keep their place as part of the fabric of a social Catholic society.
And did he really say the Irish Country Women's Association was a seditious organisation?
Oh, amongst others, housing organisations, Teddy Boys, anything to do with Trinity.
He banned Catholics from going. Well, I don't know what he could have, but he banned Catholics from going to Trinity College in Dublin. Anyone from his diocese.
That's right.
He wrote to RTE. But just to go back to the whole contraception issue, when he was president of BlackRock, he refused when the Irish Athletics Association said boys and girls could run in the same races.
Oh, absolutely! You couldn't have mixed sports.
He didn't agree with that.
Totally opposed to it.
Why?
Well, it might lead to all sorts of other things, possibly. I don't know. But, I mean, he very much felt that, you know, athletics, he backed down in that they finally agreed that women could have their own athletics, but they couldn't be mixed and compete in the same competitions as men.
How do you think he'd react if...
You saw what's happening now.
Yeah, if you heard the budget on Tuesday and the reaction to it, which was mainly positive, free contraceptives for women aged between...
Well, I mean, he was so careful. I mean, he played a great role in advising on the 1937 Constitution.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, because that's one of the things that comes up all the time, you know, the place of women in the home. And he very much felt that, you know, the Catholic family was the core of Irish society and the role of a woman in that family,
mm-hmm.
was that she should be allowed to stay at home and bring up her family as it should be.
And that was the role of women in Dev's constitution, as we say, in 1937.
When the constitution was published in 1937, he was still president of BlackRock College, and he wasn't archbishop, but all of the different articles were sent out from the Taoiseach's office to be commented on, but his thing was the maintenance of an Irish Catholic society, an Irish society, a society that was not going to be threatened by communism, was not going to be threatened by socialism, and this had to be the core of it.
Okay, stay with us, Clara, back after this break.
Talk to Joe on 1850 715 815. Talk to Joe on 1850 715 815.
And did Archbishop John Charles McQuaid, Clara, did he write any personal letters?
Well,
They're still working
their way through the archives, but we focused on, because of so much, we focused on, when we were doing this collection of correspondence, on particular areas, but in all the files we went through, We found exactly one personal letter, and that was one that had been sent to him by a captain in the Irish Army in 1923. His half-brother was a doctor. He'd joined the Free State Army as a doctor, and he was shot and killed in an ambush in, I think, Mayo?
Okay.
Newport, in 1923. And the letter from this captain described the incident and his brother's death. But that was the only one we found. I mean, there's all sorts of letters because...
And it's a fascinating topic, and you yourself and Margaret, the book you wrote is His Grace is Displeased. Dermot Ferriter wrote another fascinating book on sex and society in Ireland. That's a great read. And so, again, a lot on John Charles McQuaid. A fascinating, fascinating character, but I suspect he wouldn't like what happened this week.
Well, to be fair, Mary, put it this way, I mean, I go backwards and forwards in my opinion of him. I mean, I was terrified of him when we were school children, or even the image of him. But he controlled everything. Everything had to be controlled. He had informants reporting back to him from the guards, from the government, from the local parishes, certainly from his own parish priests.
He had spies everywhere.
Well, that's the way it would be. Okay. I mean, put it this way, these days, I suppose you call him a control freak.
Okay. Well, those books, I highly recommend those books, and I highly recommend anyone to read up on John Charles McQuaid. He confirmed me, That's not long ago, not that long ago. Did he confirm you, Clara? Yes, he did.
Indeed,
okay.
Yes.
Thanks, indeed, Clara Cullen. And we put the information, those books, up on our website. The Meaning of Life Sunday night, which we're talking some very surprising things from the former priest, Michael Harding, about God and the meaning of life and a lot more besides. Today's programme, Fergus Sweeney, Richard Byrne, Liam Mullen, Danny Keating and Rebecca Mean is the series producer. Ray Darcy's next.
Liveline on RTE Radio 1 with Kia. Coming soon, the all-new Sportage. For more, log on to kia.com.
1850 715 815 stays open until 3:15 p.m. or email joe@rte.ie.